Welcome to Angel Talk Radio Live with your hosts, Jim and Sandy Young. Welcome, everyone. I am Reverend Sandy.
And I am Reverend Jim.
Welcome to Angel Talk Radio Live. Our show is sponsored by the Living Light Center, a church of faith and healing. For anyone interested, Jim and I do personal readings. And if you'd like to have a personal reading, you can call 304-567-3354 or email sandysangeltalk@aol.com. That's sandysangeltalk@aol.com. So welcome, everyone, to Angel Talk. Today, our show is going to be on Resist Not Evil. Our whole lives are spent mostly on the things of this world, and if you're spiritual, you've been feeling the constant barrage of heaviness from the beings of darkness. They will trick you, they will offer you all the things you want, and attempt to make you believe that this year will be better than last. Yet, everything costs more, and the world is at war. You don't have to be a part of that. If you resist evil, it will only come at you harder. So let us help you understand how to keep yourself above chaos. God is offering you a reprieve. So join us for another exciting Angel Talk radio show sponsored by the Living Light Center, a church of faith and healing.
Well, I don't know about the rest of you, but I'm standing at the front of the line.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, how many of those, you know, can you, you know, receive? I mean, because I think we all step over that line and over that path from time to time. And sometimes we don't actually know we're doing it, but pretty much most of the time, you know, if you're an adult anyway, you know, you just know when you are. And if you're a child, chances are your parents have banged it into your head that, you know, don't do that. It could cause you harm, or you could fall and break an arm, or whatever it may be. So, and 9 times out of 10, they were probably right. But the whole idea here is, you know, this is a touchy subject. And yet, what we found in meditation and in, you know, reading the scriptures, reading the Greek from its original writings, and some Aramaic, and then, you know, bringing it into the Hebrew, and reading it in the Hebrew, it seems to bring out, you know, sometimes even just a word or two that breaks it open and allows you to understand things a little more fully. If you have a pen and a piece of paper, get it now, because I'm going to give you a real quick thing that you can do. Even when you get up in the morning and you're feeling kind of sluggish and your brain's still ain't awake and you haven't had your first cup of coffee, this takes 2 minutes to do, and it will literally open up the neural brain centers, the pathways, and it'll help you become more focused rather quickly. And so I'll give you a chance to get that before I give it to you. It was asked, from what may anyone be saved? And the answer came only from themselves, that is, their individual hell. They dig it with their own desires. Wow. I mean, you know, does that mean it's not as bad as if you have a little shovel than if you have a big one? Well, I can't answer that. That is only to be answered within. It was asked of Edgar Casey, the sleeping prophet of Virginia Beach, what is holding back my spiritual development? Nothing holding back, as has just been given. Self. For know, as has been given of old, though I take the wings of the morning of thought and fly unto the uttermost parts of the earth, thou art there. Though I fly into the heavenly host, thou art there. Though I make my bed in hell, thou art still there. And as he has promised, when ye cry unto me, I will hear, and I will answer speedily. Nothing prevents except self. Keep self and the shadows away. Turn thy face to the light, and the shadows shall always fall behind you. On a number of occasions, individuals ask Edgar Casey to explain what was meant by the devil as described in Scripture. The answer is essentially that the devil is a representative of the spirit of rebellion, even within us, that wars against our spiritual or higher self, the two sides. And I know we've all felt it. You know, one says, I'll go ahead, it won't hurt anything. The other one says, nah, you know, you're not supposed to. Which one do we give in? It was said, before you today is both good and evil. Choose that which you will. The will is the determinative factor. You know, in terms of whether or not we pursue good, the spiritual laws that we came to manifest, that's what we came here for, or evil, which becomes selfishness. And so, will is given to man as he comes into this manifested form that we see in mental forces with a choice as given. There is set before us good and evil. Evil is rebellion. Good is the Son of Life, of light, of truth, and the Son of Light, of life, of truth. Came into physical being to demonstrate and show and lead the way for man's ascent into the power of good over evil in the material world. Why was the Christ so important in this universe we live in? And actually, the scriptures in Genesis, you know, tell how it was created and how he was the one that became the visible light of that creation. It was because he was called the begotten Son of God. Why was he called the begotten? Because he was conceived within the mind of God before creation had even existed. He was conceived and a full spiritual being and perfect in every way, a way that demanded no pardon. And that was why he was able to name all of the animals. You really think he could have sat on a rock someplace, you know, in the Garden of Eden, as calm as it was. And as the animals came two by two, you know, I'm going to call you a zebra. I'm going to call you a rabbit. You know, it didn't happen that way. If you read the book of Genesis, you'll see that man was actually in the material form, or took material form, you know, on the last day. The first 4 days, I believe, are the creation of the species and the earth itself and everything that exists within the universe. And so all of these creations were not manifested in light, in substance, in any kind of way. It was created within the mind of God. And it wasn't until man, or a form, had been created that man could occupy in this experimental universe. And that was the begotten, the Christ. And he came into that form, and he exploded outward in visible light. Not that light didn't exist before that, for light has always existed. But most oftentimes, universes beyond our sight are of a higher frequency or higher vibration. You know, even in the area where we live, in this, what we call third dimension, you know, just a portion of a frequency higher than where we are is enough to change what is seen or what is, you know, around us. And the light is changed. If we could see fourth dimension above us, and we can't right here, because you would never be able to see heaven from where you are. I don't care if you're on the 144th level, you won't be able to see the 145th from where you are. That's why I call them the false ones of this system that have tried to fool us for 2,000 years, ever since Christ said upon the cross, Father, it is finished. And it was. And so they then took over, and they decided to, you know, take a look at everything and recreate it in their own abilities, but to do so, it took almost all of their light, and it was not able to be replenished. Anything that is created, whether it be us, whether it be, you know, angelic realms, whether it be, you know, the dark realms, whether it be, you know, the earth plane and the things in it, it has to be consistently, constantly restored with the codes and the light of God. And if it's not, it will eventually fall down. It will disintegrate. It will, you know, be eaten up by moths and rust, so say the scriptures. And that includes us. You know, if we fall to the dark side and we pass, well, we stay in that darkness. And the problem is that you're not being replenished. So you fall farther and farther and farther and farther into that darkness. And pretty soon you don't even know who you were or what you were or what you did, if you were here or if you were ever here. And it takes a crying out of the soul for God to reach down and pull the soul up. And so, you know, the idea here is that, you know, when we lean towards what we want, what our will is, selfishness, which is evil, it's the same thing. If it's selfishness, well, I want that house. You know, I got just me and my wife, but it's got six bedrooms. You know, hey, I like it because it's beautiful, it's big, it's plenty of room inside. I mean, is that what you need? When you stand in the middle and you have the choice and you take the side of God's will, then you're not resisting evil. You are simply choosing God. And when you choose God, well, the upper realms move a little faster in time if, you know, if you can conceive time, because the, you know, in reality, time does not really exist. It's only in the material realms that time is active. So it moves a little faster. So if you desire it, you know, at point A, well, it's moving faster. It's probably not going to materialize to about point D. And too oftentimes we get discouraged. You know, well, I prayed for that and I didn't get it. Well, how long did you wait? Well, I waited a good 48 hours. I hear you. What were you asking for? Oh, mansion. You know, I mean, it depends on what it's for. Is it for God? Again, I had a man ask for $1 million. And I told him, yes, God says you can have it. But there's an attachment. And what's that? I said, you've got to take all of the $100 million or the $1 million and utilize it to help other people who are less fortunate than yourself. Oh, well, I'm not going to do that. Well, then I guess you have your answer. And, you know, not that God couldn't give you $2 million, but what would you do with the first million? And we were asked that once by an angel. They said, if you want $1 million, what would you do with it? I said, well, haven't we always utilized whatever we've had for the work of God? And they said, yes, but if you had $1 million right now, you'd probably want to take a vacation because you figure you've deserved one. You haven't had one in 25 years. They said, and after you took the first one, you might even take a second one because you think, well, you know, what's the heck? May as well just take a second one too. They said, and you'd probably go out and buy a brand new car, a vehicle that, you know, I mean, just comfortable. They said, but are you afraid or do you worry about the cars you drive now? And at the time, they were getting rather old. But no, they had always been good. They didn't nickel and dime us, and they got us to where we needed to go. And so we said, no, well, you know, we're not ashamed to drive them, and they get us where we needed to go. And they said, okay. They said, so what else? I said, well, we need a bed. They said, well, no, what you really need is a mattress on the floor. They said, but God understands that mankind doesn't like to sleep on a mattress on the floor, although there are many who do. He said, but, you know, God understands if you need a bed, but it's the needs, and you go to God for them. If you just decide, I need a bed, and I'm going to buy one, and you take whatever money you can scrounge up and you go buy one, or out of the bank account, you go pick the one you want, and it's, you know, it is a nice bed. Is it more than you needed? And did you give God the chance to bless you with it? And that's the whole idea, you know, is to let God bring the blessings. God knows what you need before you even ask. And it's already been created and in the pipeline. And you just got to walk the path, and you'll find that all of a sudden, there it is. It comes to you as the need is.
That's for sure. That's a fact.
So, you know, the idea here is, it was even said by Casey that, interestingly enough, they suggest that there was a group of angels that chose to help individuals whenever they chose evil or separation from God. In other words, they were called the fallen angels. And they were not those angels that chose to apart from the divine, but instead those angels that chose to help humanity become aware of its separation from the God force. And I hear that, and I know plenty of times, you know, maybe I could do a little less with that. You know, because, boy, I tell you what, it gets hard sometimes. You know, sometimes you have people in your congregation, and you can't even squeeze a dollar out of them. You know, we've been blessed this year. I think, Sandy, how many cases of food?
Well, this year we were able to distribute 189 boxes of food and 96 bags of clothing, blankets, toys, and household supplies, and even one bed.
Whole bed.
Yeah.
Headboard, footboard, mm-hmm. railings, mattresses, the whole nine yards.
Yeah.
I think it was a queen size, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
So
we made a lot of people very happy this year.
Oh, and
it was thanks to all the contributions.
And a lady who had trouble with cooking, and so we were able to get a pressure cooker. One of those mm-hmm. that has the little pictures on it, so all you have to do is put the stuff in it, mm-hmm. you know, lock the top, and you hit the button, and it'll cook it in about 20 minutes.
Yeah, we had a lot of wonderful gifts that were given that we were able to distribute in. And so that was a very, very wonderful Christmas for many people.
Even the clothes, you know, we were able to get in touch with people who were in need of clothing for their children. Some children didn't have coats to go to school in, you know, or even good coats to play outside or coats to play outside in. And so we actually were able to call a lot of those families and get the exact sizes they needed. And then we would relay that to the outreach centers in Virginia mm-hmm. with Paula Mashbrook and James Mashbrook, who are part of the Living Light Center and ministers of the Living Light Center. And they were able to, you know, gather up a lot of that and bring it down here where it was separated, put into the boxes. And I tell you what, some of those boxes were well over 40 pounds each.
Yeah.
They had a lot of food in them, a lot of clothing. And the clothing is exactly what they needed. I remember we had one pair of shoes that was a size 10,
mm-hmm.
and we didn't have anybody to give them to. We didn't quite even know how we got that size, but when we were talking to one lady, she said, yeah, she goes, I have everything I need. She goes, except I can't find a pair of shoes in my son's size. And Sandy said, well, what size is it? And she goes, well, it's a 10. Just happened to be the
yes.
size of those shoes.
I know. It was quite a blessing that all these things were able to be distributed to all the people. The smiles on their faces, the joy in their heart, it was just wonderful, wonderful.
Absolutely. And we deliver. And believe me, around here, there are some places that it gets dark an hour early because it is so deep in the hollows.
Yeah.
Very, very, very deep in some of those hollows.
Yeah, it is.
And some people, they'll have a whole house, you know, many bedrooms and stuff, and yet they live in one room.
I know. It's really sad. Well, Jim, let me do a little prophecy here.
Okay.
Before we go on. Okay. Earth changes are increasing more. Much of the Earth's plates this year are going to move and create many earthquakes. These movements will cause great destruction to buildings, bridges, and gas lines. And many regions in the United States will experience this from the west to the east coast. The water levels will continue to rise to coastlines. The solar activity is moving into a solar max. So what used to be one coronal mass ejection at a time as a norm is now 3 to 6 at a time. When these coronal mass ejections are Earth-directed, it continues to weaken the magnetosphere, leaving the planet vulnerable to solar winds, leading to more wind activity within the planet and more intensity in the winds. With the magnetic fluctuations, it's affecting people's memory and also causing emotional outbursts and, for some, out-of-control violence and more warlike activity. This pressure we're feeling is going to increase, so one must remember to turn to God, pray, and align with the oneness of the divine beings of light. You are being tested, so how are you going to handle these situations? You must always be aware of your thoughts and actions, so not to allow these energetic influences to control you completely. You're in a stage of growth where your thoughts are manifesting themselves faster in your life. If you don't take control over them and practice good behavior and oneness with God, they will take control over you. You must understand, to move into a realm of instantaneous manifestation, you have to show control over your own negative thoughts and emotions, so not to be destructive and not to destroy things and other people. Each of you are being moved energetically to understand yourself better, to rid old unwanted habits, to live in truth, and to honor and respect life and your Creator, and to humble yourself and give praise and gratitude to God. For in the near future, when situations become so large and out of your control, you can turn to God and ask for help, and know He will be there for you. He will recognize you as one of His own. For the time is now to become more awakened and aware of your actions and habits, and try to align yourself with the higher consciousness of the light. Blessings to you.
Absolutely. And you know, going to church is great, but just going to church, asking for forgiveness, or believing that you're saved because you asked for it when you were 12. You know, the whole idea is that once you do, is to live it. You have to be the example. People will not hear what you say as much as they will look at what you do. And if you're doing everything you can to gain more fortune, more money, more objects, you know, rather than asking God's will and allowing God to bring those things to you, then, you know, it's not going to put you onto the other side in a very good light. You know, the wheat will be separated from the chaff.
Yeah, certainly.
You know, we're spiritual beings. We're having a physical experience. We were created to bring spiritual laws into the earth. That's why we're here.
Right.
And it's a struggle. There's no doubt it's a struggle. It's a struggle for humankind. But do you think that a grain of corn has forgotten why it came into the world? Do you think that any of the influences in nature, an acorn, an oak, the elm, the vine, or anything, has forgotten what manner of expression that it came into the earth and its purpose? Only man forgets. And only man, it is the only creation by God that has the ability to rebel against its own creator.
Yeah. Well, you know, Jim, when Jesus says, do not resist an evil person, he's revealing God's heart for for how we are to treat those who wrong us. By saying, do not resist an evil person, Jesus is not requiring us to be pacifists or to never resist evil forces. Well, in fact, in James 4:7 and Peter 5:9, it commands us to resist the evil and his evil practices. But by not taking revenge or retaliation against people, we're able to mirror to them what God is like. God, in his grace, does not retaliate against those who wrong him. He does not try to get even with sinners. But rather, God invites them into a relationship with himself and, in Christ, offers to forgive them of their sins. So perhaps the most important reason we should not resist an evil person is that Jesus himself did not. Following Jesus' example, we should not resist an evil person. We, too, can choose to love and forgive those who have wronged us. The Lord teaches us that it's wrong to retaliate and seek revenge. Romans 12:21, do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. It's important that we take control. You know, when Jesus was faced with the long-established tradition of merchants making big profits from the prescribed religious practices of the people, he drove them out of the temple with a whip. When Jesus was faced with an entrenched group of religious leaders who were abusing and misleading the people while building up wealth and power for themselves, he engaged in a fierce verbal battle with them. Then ultimately, that cost him his life. Well, when we're faced with ongoing systematic evil, that is when Jesus did not come to bring peace, but a sword, a double-edged sword. That is when it's time to put on the whole armor of God, Ephesians 6:13 through 17, and engage in an active battle to right wrongs, defeat injustice, and replace it with justice both for ourselves and for others. When faced with ongoing evil and abuse, we must take a stand for as long as it takes to resist and overcome that evil. Yet, as Jesus says, this should never be done in order to retaliate. It should be done for definite, positive reasons, aiming at a good result. It should be done out of love and respect, not only for ourselves and those we're defending from evil, but also for the enemies who are perpetuating that evil. It should be done not to get back at the offenders and hurt them, but so that what is just and right can prevail. It should be done so that both we and those we love can live in peace, protected from those who would harm us.
Well, it's so true. You know, I remember, Sandy, when, you know, years and years ago, I'd fight a lot of battles, it seemed like, especially in the dream states, you know, almost leaving the body and going into an area that I knew there were a group of dark beings that were harmful to the people that were located there. That, you know, they created so much diversion, so much chaos that, you know, it wasn't right. And the people were of a good heart. And I'll never forget when I came back, I felt really, really bad. And, you know, and you took one look at me and you said, you look like a porcupine. And I said, a porcupine? And you said, yeah. You said, you have so many what look like needles sticking in you all over you, you know,
yeah,
that you must have gotten into a really big battle and one that you underestimated. And
yeah,
there was no doubt, you know. I oftentimes don't, you know, estimate how big the crowd can get. And you took them out one by one, you know. And it did. I felt much better after that. But, you know, the angels told me one time, they said, remember how we told you that we can keep you from being killed? And I said, yeah. They said, well, we forgot to tell you that if you run into the middle of a massive battle, you still may come out with a broken arm or a broken leg. We can't guarantee you that.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, oh, well, you could have told me that 10 years ago, you know.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's been some big ones.
That's a fact.
But one of the people I have most admired was Mahatma Gandhi. And one of his quotes was, my nonviolence does not admit of running away from danger and leaving dear ones unprotected. Between violence and cowardly flight, I can only prefer violence to be cowardice. He said in 1924, then he added that nonviolence is the summit of bravery. And it's true. I remember when he was walking towards the salt mines and the people working for the British government had set up lines of individuals, and they were to beat each of those that dared try to cross the line to get to the salt themselves, which the salt belonged to them. And they did it anyway. And the individual who was there to record it and you know, give it back to the newspapers of London and England and all those places, he asked him, he said, but if they beat you, each one of you, to your bloody mess, he said, and they arrest you, he said, haven't they won? He said, no. He said, the minute that they swing a baton, from that point forward, they have lost. He said, they don't see it, but it's true. I can't tell you the number of times I've had people come across the room towards me because they were of, you know, Middle Eastern religion, and I may have said a word or two that, you know, they didn't like. But my point of view is that God is one. There is one God. How you get there, how the path you choose is your choice. But there's one God. And I've had them come across the room, big, big guys, right towards me. And I didn't flee. I didn't move. I didn't do anything except just stand there calmly. And they would get about 2 feet away, and then all of a sudden, like a hand stopped them. And they'd stand there for a minute, and somebody woke up to them, and I could hear him say to them, he's right. You know, what he's saying is right. Just let it go. And the guy would turn around and leave. And it was amazing to me that, you know, typically, you know, I would have thought that here goes. I'm going to have to do battle and really don't want to, you know. But, you know, if God calls, I go. And I found that the path opens when you resist not evil. Evil will try its best to turn you its way, to make it look good. It will offer you the moon, the sun, the palaces of the earth. It will offer you everything you could want. And trust me, if you didn't ask God for it, and God chose to bless you with it, and then you gave God the glory, then it's evil, period. And it will fall apart. It will break down. It will turn into dust eventually. And at this point, we're not far away from it. But, you know, it's all about making sure that we are in that right space, that right place where we're supposed to be. Nonviolence is the law of our species, as violence is the law of the brutes. The spirit lies dormant in the brute, and he knows no law but that of physical might. The dignity of man requires obedience to a higher law, to the strength of the spirit. And the two I mentioned, I could mention 100 of them that appeared the same way. And can I explain them? No. Except to say that, you know, was I afraid even? No. I showed no fear. You can't show fear because then you're not believing. And it's the faith that gets you through. You know, so, you know, faith is the evidence of things not seen. And it has always proven itself right in the midst of the harshest of even physical battles on the earth. So, you know, the whole idea is that we are spiritual beings having a physical experience. We're created to bring spiritual laws into the earth. That is why we were here, or we are here. So, you know, it's not a difficult one when you really think about it. If you have your pens and paper ready, I want to just give you this one thing you can do to help, you know, unblock the energies into the brain, into the mind, in the morning when you wake up or at any time that you feel you need to. So the idea is to find a comfortable position, keep your spine straight, your legs uncrossed, and relax any tense muscles in your body. Then with your head and neck, do each of the following three times. Head forward, head backwards. Head to the right shoulder, head to the left shoulder. And rotate, circle your head counterclockwise. And do not strain or force it. And you do each one of those three times. Then, with deep breathing, fill your lungs from the bottom to top. Exhale from top to bottom. Breathe in through your right nostril and out through your mouth. So in other words, you'd have to hold your left nostril closed. In through your right nostril and out through your mouth. And you repeat it three times. Then breathe in through your left nostril and out through your right nostril. And you repeat that three times. You can do whatever other meditations or things you feel you need to, or whatever, you know, you feel. One thing I would add, do not do that exercise if you are angry. It is not meant to be done when you are angry, because it's clearing the central nervous system and the flow through the brain and through the dharmata, and it's to cleanse it. And it then goes down through the third eye and into the heart at the front of the spine, which then cleanses and bathes the heart. And if you look at it, actually, if the energy starts at the base of the spine and goes upward and around the back of your head, which you tilt your head back at 52 degrees, it goes around the head and in through the front of the forehead and then down to the heart. What you have is the shepherd's staff and what David called, "Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me." And it's true. There's no doubt about it. It works. The water that goes up the back of the spine does not mix with the water that goes down the front of the spine to the heart. And so in between is the dharmata, which is whichever way you wish to pronounce it. And it is the sack of water that surrounds the brain. And in it are these little three-fingered protrusions, and there are 24 of them. And we call them the 24 elders before the throne. They must bow down before the throne, before the light of God, and information can come through when it hits that membrane and the water, and it turns it around the other way, and it pulls it in, and then pushes it up with those three-fingered protrusions against the top of that membrane. And around the top of that membrane is the vena cava, which is the vein that returns the blood to the heart. So any messages that are in symbol form can be pushed into that bloodstream and returned to the heart. From there, it can be utilized anywhere throughout the body, outwardly, throughout the planet. And so many things that we have forgotten, so many things that the teachers, the preachers, you know, the ones who are supposed to be leading us in the way are not giving us. Again, you know, if you wish to have discernment, kadosh, 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 Adonai, S-A, B-A, Yot, Y-O-T. You can also use Yose, Y-O-S-E. Now, that's just changes by the dialect within the Hebrew language. But both work. And when they are used, no dark or negative energy or being can withstand its vibration. Even the high levels of angelic beings use it as a salutation with each other, just to ensure that there is no deceit anywhere around them. And so these are methods by which Sandy and I have used for 20 years or more, and we have found them Oh, I mean, worth way more than we could ever, you know, tell you.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
I mean, use them and try them, and you will find, even in the physical world, I mean, I used to move a cloud from away from the sun because there was only one up there, and it would stay, when I would use those words, and it would stay away for about 20 minutes, and then it would try to sneak back over, and I'd go back into the caduceus, and it would move back away again, and I did that for 6 months before I even told Sandy, you know, because, of course, she doesn't take everything I say at word value, I mean, you know, so I knew I'd have to prove it to her, and ever since then, we have been using it, and sometimes I like a little shade, you know, so I'll leave the cloud there, but if the light is being kept from you, or deceitfulness is attempting to invade your area or your anywhere you are, you can center yourself, use the nose breathing if necessary, and use the Kadosh Adonai Sabayat, and it means holy, holy, holy is the Lord God of hosts.
And also, I want to cover one other thing. You know, in order for us to move forward, there are many things that we hold on to that have to be renounced. And so we have to go to God, and we have to ask to renounce these things so that it can free us and we can become one with the light of God. And in the list of them, we had covered some in our last show, and some of them that are left are renouncing meaningless speech, so that you can receive the light of God, and renounce malice, renounce equivocativeness, renounce love of the world, renounce thievery, evil speech, base acts, hardness of the heart, anger, cursing, larceny, robbery, evil reporting, contentiousness and feuding, all ignorance, viciousness, fury, adultery, murder. All of these things need to be renounced. You know, renounce godlessness, hardness of the heart, even the use of spells, blasphemy, and deceptive teachings. It's so important that in this list that you remember to renounce this and ask that when you renounce it, that the light of God fill you and deliver you from the darkness. The reason for renouncing these things, you are releasing yourself of all the negative things of this world of matter. We are in this world, but we are not of it. That doesn't mean that the things you need cannot be supplied, but that they should be supplied by the will of God. Jim, let me ask you a question. How does one know what the will of God is?
Well, it's difficult to know at any given time what the will of God is. But the will of God has always been to be able to create us to be companions with himself. And in doing so, he created the world from the beginning to the end, all the way. It is us who ate that bite of the apple and created the spiral of the wheel that keeps going round and round and round and round, just like the little mouse on the wheel. He thinks he's going somewhere, but he's not really going anywhere. And so it's hard to know the will of God, except to know that it's to keep you happy, to make you, you know, share in the space of love, to share in the space of light, to be able to, you know, be happy, to being able to help someone who is in less shape than you are. If any of those things are not in your daily routine, then know that you are probably not within the will of God, because spirit can come in and spirit can speak to you or influence you if you are receptive to it. But you are the one that has to bring it into the material realm. And that's what so often we don't realize, is that you could do it through the false ones, is what I'll call them. You could do it through the false ones, and most times they'll give it to you right away. I mean, the Hebrews would do a covenant with God one day. The very next day, they were doing one with, you know, the satanic forces, and he would promise them, I'll put three more ears of corn on each stalk today, you know? Well, that was too much for them to, you know, turn away from. When, you know, I could do the same thing, but did they need three more ears? Or did they have plenty of corn to feed themselves, their, you know, their neighbors, and probably, you know, the block down on the other street? The thing about it is that, you know, when Jesus was hungry, he would send his disciples into the fields, the cornfields, and to pick enough corn, just enough corn to eat. And I guarantee you that those stalks of corn, you know, produced way more corn than what was taken. And that's the key, receiving for the purposes of sharing. And if we're not doing that, if we're taking, we're constantly taking because we want it, you know. It was once ours, we want it now.
Right.
And, I mean, how can anyone even begin to believe that they're walking in within the will of God in any way, shape, or form? Is it not easy to lay out, you know, the two sides and choose that which you will? Am I doing this because I want it, and it's my selfish reasons I want it, and I want one bigger than the guy next door? I want my house bigger than Joe's house. I mean, or I just want more than I need, you know? If we have a house with six bedrooms and we have two people living in it, well, we're literally taking away from somebody else that probably needs the extra two bedrooms, because light is brought into this planet and it's sucked up a lot of times by the not-so-shiny light, because they cannot survive without it being restorative. And so, you know, those who are within the will of God are constantly being restored. So what they need will be brought to them, not excessive. You may not have $10 billion, but you'll have what you need, every bit, every way. 9 times out of 10, it will come in the 11th hour. Why? Because obstacles will be placed in your way to make sure that, you know, it's much harder to get it, or to get to it, than it should be. But when you're within the will of God, God will move those boulders, and you may have a few stepping stones to walk across, but you know, it's not hard. We know, we really do know what is from God or what should be of God. Isn't it everything? Anything and everything that we desire, yep, we should go to God for. And
it's so true, Joe. We really have to turn back to God. Now, but you know, there's, it's important also in our daily works that we say positive affirmations, because this helps enable us to remember our presence in the light worlds. And, you know, saying affirmations like be still or peaceful, that is, find the peace within you from the divine presence, the Shekinah. And saying the affirmations to love one another, that you may be deserving of the light of God, to be gentle, be peaceable, be compassionate, give charitably, attend to the poor, the sick, and those who are in need. You know, these are the high qualities of our soul. And by saying affirmations like love God, that you may receive the light of God, or be just, or be good, doing these kinds of affirmations brings you into alignment and oneness with that of God.
And also being praiseworthy of everything you receive and everything you're giving out. Like, when we give our cases out, people will say, oh, thank you so much for bringing this to us. And it's like, no, God, to God be the glory. You know, we're just the messengers here, and we're bringing this to you as receiving for the purposes of sharing.
Mm-hmm. You know, when you're in true prayer and meditation, you're actually asking the higher thoughts to surround your thoughts, the higher love to surround your love, that your thoughts are focused on the divine God. You know, we're being given this higher teaching to break us out of the six chakras, which are the energy centers of the body that create vortexes of light that feed and restore the areas of our body where they're located, so that the body can wear this crown of light. You know, just remember that the Father, through Christ, has prepared all of us for cosmic evolution. God loves us, and we are learning to become more godlike beings so that we can feel and embrace all that God has to offer us.
It's true. And, you know, a lot of people ask, well, why was, you know, Jesus, you know, the only begotten Son of God? Well, it's because if you read Genesis, you'll see that creation didn't just exist, you know, day by day. You know, yes, it did, but it was within the mind of God. It did not become in a physical manifestation until the last day, until, you know, Christ had been created, or Christ had been placed into a more physical form so that he could, you know, be the creator of this universe. This universe we live in is an experimental one. That's why we're allowed to have free will. And, you know, in some ways it has not gone very well. In other ways, you know, there have been children born in ways that have never been born before in any other system. And so, you know, there have been great strides made in an experimental universe. But it is a very dangerous one because it is so easy to get lost. And so long ago, you know, spiritual beings came upon the physical realms, and they weren't supposed to interfere. They were supposed to, kind of like the fifth directive in Spock, you know, or in Star Trek, but they weren't supposed to interfere. They were only supposed to observe. And yet, they got caught up in it. They decided to use their abilities to create in the material world without regard for God's will. And when they did, oh my goodness, all kinds of things happened. Grotesque beings were created, all kinds of mythological things that we read, and they are called mythological, but they existed. And then they didn't know how to take them back. And some of the spiritual beings that came, they just got lost here in the physical realms, and they didn't have any way out. And they fell into darkness, deeper and deeper and deeper. And when it says in the Bible that the face of God, along with the sons of God, which were us, moved across the face of the waters, across the face of the deep. Well, it doesn't get any darker than the deep, does it? And God said, let there be light. And there was light. And for the first time, those beings realized that there was a God that existed because they had forgotten. When you fall into darkness, you forget.
Mm-hmm.
And you fall farther into darkness, you really forget. And the farther you fall into darkness, you know, you can't remember any of it. And, oh my goodness gracious, can anyone imagine having to, you know, live that way or survive or just be that way? Because the light has been pulled from them. There's no restoration. And eventually, if the soul doesn't, you know, doesn't choose God, then it will be absorbed back into the body of God, and it will lose its remembrance completely.
Right. One other thing I want to share is that when we say the law, we must remember that law is love. Love is law. God is love, and God is law. The Old Testament teaches the letters of the law, while the New Testament emphasizes the spirit of the law, of love and grace. And it is that law that's written within our hearts and minds so that we can know and do it. So as we attune to his will through meditation and action, as we center on the Christ Spirit within to guide us in our every decision, we know more deeply anchored to his word, his law, his love. Heaven and earth may pass away, but my word shall not pass away. We will be with him if we choose, and in our coming times of crisis and testing, we can know the comfort of his ever-present love and the wisdom of his ways.
Right. And when you talk about the spirit of the law, you know, if you look back at the law, at the lifetime of Joseph, Jacob's son, by Rachel, he was thrown in the pit, and then he was sold by his own brothers into slavery. And because he could interpret dreams, he interpreted the Pharaoh's dreams, even told the Pharaoh what the dreams were, not just interpreting them, but he was made second in command of everything that Pharaoh owned. The only one who was above him was Pharaoh. And we see this a lot in spiritual situations where the individual is second in command because there's always God. And then there was the Christ. And again, down through, it is trying to give us the ideal. But the whole idea here is that Joseph lived by the spirit of the law, but he always made the right choice. And when he did, you know, he had a wife, he had children, but they were Egyptian. Well, at that time, that was the first of the Hebrews, so to speak, or the Israelites, because Jacob's name was changed to Israel. And in my estimation, Israel is Isis, Ra, and the Elohim. It's a trinity of a father, mother, and a child, you know, in one, in material manifestation of a God force. And so his children, one of them being Joseph, was the one that became second only to Pharaoh, and told Pharaoh that there was going to be 7 years of famine and 7 years of plenty. And so Pharaoh was distraught, and Joseph said, well, there's one way around it. In the 7 years of plenty come first. Put back enough to get you through the 7 years of not enough, and people can come, and they can purchase it, and you will be the most famous Pharaoh that ever lived. And he made Joseph second in command, only to him. So the whole idea here is there is the spirit of the law and the letter of the law. Live it in God's will, and you may find places where you are lifted up above a little bit of the chaos of the matrix. So we want to thank you for listening to us today. Please give us a call, 304-567-3354. Ask for Reverend Jim or Reverend Sandy. And if you have any questions about today's discussion or anything that you'd like to talk about, give us a call. We're always here.
And we want to thank all of you for joining us today for this radio show, and we do hope that you will tune in and join us again in 2 weeks. And God bless.
God bless.